And welcome in. At long last, the B-Squared Show returns. Pandemic or not, we are here, and we are hoping everyone is feeling healthy and well and home. And I'm Jordan Bernfield, and Brian Beto is with me and catching up during this very uncertain and weird time. But thankfully, we've had The Last Dance for the last 5 weeks for a couple hours each Sunday to forget about all the things going on in the world, because we don't have the Cubs, and we don't have baseball, and this has been a very weird time. But I'm glad that you're doing well, and your wife's doing well, and your kids are doing well, and at least in this podcast, so far, so good.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and yours too. And we're hanging in there the best we can. And, you know, The Last Dance gave me something to look forward to every Sunday night. We can get into that a little bit. I know we've been primarily a Cubs thing, and we'll certainly focus on that here today. But the rest of the sports world was really encompassed with that. There was even some golf, live golf on TV yesterday, the TaylorMade match, which was pretty great. But, you know, I was thinking a few weeks ago, our good buddy and friend of the show and part of the show, Kevin Fishbane, tweeted out or sent us a group chat or group text from Time Hop taking a screenshot of when we launched the first ever B Squared show back in April 2010. It was opening day for the Cubs.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking, like, that team was just total crap, basically, as you know, just horrendous all season long. It was lose last year. Mike Quatty took over. They just weren't. It was the end of, like, the Derek Lee, Aramis Ramirez days, which were some good days in general, but that team was just garbage. Carlos Zambrano, too. And I remember thinking, like, God, how much wouldn't you, like, recently, like, how much would I give just to watch an awful Cubs team right now? Like, 2010 through 2014 level bad, 2006, 2000, 1990, the 90s, basically, outside of 1998 and, like, 93 when they were, like, okay. Like, I would just go anything to just see, like, Thomas Diamond go out there and throw, like, five innings of seven-run ball. Like, just all of those, you know what I'm saying? Like, Marlon Byrd being our all-star representative, like, would give anything for that.
So, because I think you're answering the question for me, but have you missed sports that much where, like, every day it's just – because for me, I will say that I do miss it, but I don't – oddly, I miss it less than I thought I would, if that makes sense. Like, I definitely miss sports, and – there have been many days, especially on the nice days, like, I'll turn my wife and I'll be like, man, I wish we could go to a Cubs game at Wrigley right now. That would be so great. Or, like, watching The Last Dance has made me think it would be awesome if there was playoff basketball on right now or things like that. Yeah. But I don't, just because of how all-encompassing and sad and crazy everything has been in the world, I feel like it's way... You know, I, like, my priorities have been in other places. So I guess not every day am I feeling this incredible need for sports, but there have been certain days where it's like, I would watch, you know, the worst Cubs team just if they were on. But I will say I've had trouble with the replayed games. Sometimes they've been fun to watch if it's a specific thing that I'm watching for. But when I know what's coming, it's much harder for me to get really into it. It's like, I'll stay with it for 5 minutes and I'm like, yeah, I got it. I saw this game already.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it when it first started. Like, I think it was a great, it's still a good idea, right? To do that, because what else is there? And I was into it. Like, I saw the Cubs 2016 games. And as we were talking before we started recording, that I've been DVRing the Bulls playoff runs from 96 and 98 and then just having them on in the background the next day. And I will say this, that I've enjoyed some of the random playoff games because I've seen – the amount of times I've seen game six of the 98 finals is, like, just absurd, like a million times, right?
Yeah.
So – because I'm a psycho, as you know. But, like, the random 96 playoff games, like game two, second round, Bulls, Knicks, like, I've loved watching some of that stuff because, you know, I was in 96, I would have been 11. and knew what was going on, and I was watched every single night. But I think you get in a greater appreciation for some of that stuff now. And like, yeah, you knew they were the greatest team of all time. They won 72 games, won the championship, yada, yada. But I think like until recently, and you go back and watch like the ins and outs, like the small thing, because we're wiser when it comes to basketball now. Both you and I are big basketball people in general.
Yes.
Like the appreciation I have for things I didn't appreciate. Not like necessarily Michael Jordan, but like just the defense. And like I even tweet about like, man, like Ron Harper was really underappreciated. Like there were certain things like this good players, you know, that sort of stuff. But I think like I like missing, like I think my appreciation is greater for some of that stuff because of it. But to your point, it's like, okay, I'm ready to get back to live action. I do feel like every day is getting to be like Groundhog Day. But nice days, like, yes, Cubs game, but it's good to be outside. But like, I think right now I could be watching, you know, the NBA playoffs, you know, the NBA guy could be watching, you know, middle of May baseball games when you start to like think about establish where your team's at. Are they going to be good or not? So I don't know. I'm missing it pretty bad. If yeah. I'm being honest.
No, I mean, it's good. We need people like you to exist so that, you know,
psycho.
We are so that I remain employed in sports,
right?
And you remain employed in sports. We need people to be obsessed with sports so that when sports happen, that they are consuming it and we can work in them. So that's good. And I definitely miss it. Oh, the one thing I'll say is, we both caveat all of this by saying like these are obviously very small problems in the grand scheme of all of this, and we obviously hope everyone stays healthy and safe and all of that. I'm just and we're both in fortunate positions that one of our concerns is like when do we get to be entertained again by sports? But in the context of this podcast, which is a sports podcast, it has been very weird not having this stuff around. And you know, because I was thinking about this recently, really other than 9/11 for a week, you know, because they wanted to make sure that it was safe to play again. There has never been an era where there was no sports for a prolonged period of time. So it's just been such a bizarre thing. But I will say, having watched, especially with The Last Dance, when you're talking about like some of these things that you don't appreciate, or that we didn't appreciate as kids, one of the things that I said this last night, they were one of the highlights they were showing was like a perfect execution of the triangle offense, which led to a Pippen layup, I want to say. And I remember turning to my wife as this play happened. I'm like, God, that was perfect basketball. That was perfect execution of the triangle. And she's looking at me like, I don't know what you're talking about, nor do I care what you're talking about. But for me, it was just like, gosh, that's so perfect. They were so, I mean, obviously they had a compilation of some of the greatest players of all time, including the greatest in Michael. But the fact that they also played this beautiful style on offense and this smothering defensive game. And it was just, leading into it, I'll say this. The Last Dance obviously came in with a lot of hype. I feel like you, Brian Beto, were one of the original hype men of The Last Dance. You've been hyping this well before it was cool. I was excited to watch it for the nostalgia because of Michael, because of so many different things. It definitely lived up to the hype for me. And usually these kind of things never do. Maybe it's because we're all cooped up in our homes and we're starving for sports. But I really think that Jason Hare and all the people that put this together over the course of the last, whatever, 2, 3, 4 years, with ESPN and Michael's team and all these people. I mean, it was captivating stuff. I think there were a few things that could have been different. Of course, everyone's going to have their opinions on different things. But in totality, I thought it was really, really great stuff. I thought they did an awesome job with it. I loved it. I could have watched 10 more episodes of it. I wish there were 10 more episodes of it because I don't know what I'm going to do this Sunday night. But it was really, really great stuff.
It was wonderful. And you know what's interesting is like the reason why people generally like documentaries, the reason why documentaries are done is because it's the topic that you're interested in that you need to get educated more about. You don't know a ton about. In this case, being the psychos that we are and people that in Chicago go specifically, like, I don't think there was anything that I didn't know that I learned, yet I still loved it. So the fact that, like, I knew all the things that were going to happen, I wasn't really surprised by anything. Like, a couple of the things, like, even the end, I thought the ending last night was really cool with that. Obviously, don't know about the stories about just the fire and, like, the poem that Jordan wrote and all that.
That was sort unbelievable.
But, like, yeah. And the, like, Jordan knocking on, you know, Rodman's apartment door with Carmen Electra on there, like, small caveats like that, but nothing else really surprised me, but it was still so well done and so much fun and just reinforced a lot of, like, what you remember. And to me, I've always said this, like, the one other appreciation I have about this group and watching the games is that growing up, you just were like, okay, well, you were spoiled, so Michael Jordan was the best, this team was going to win, they were 98, they were the best team, they're going to win. That team is not ahead of the field from a straight talent standpoint, like across the board. Michael Jordan was still the best player in the league. Scottie Pippen was still one of the best. But Jordan was 35. Rodman was about to be 37, if not 37 already. Pippen was past his prime. All these guys were past their best. Kukoc was past his prime. They all were like past their athletic primes. It was clearly, in my opinion, the worst of the six title teams. Yet, and Michael alludes to this last night about how he still felt on top because of the mental part and the adjusting his game and how he'd become obviously a better shooter. He shot almost 43% from three in 1996, which is something I didn't know until I looked up the other day, which is wild because for people that say he wouldn't have played as well in today's game, he wouldn't have adjusted to that. But the 98 team, like, they're my favorite team of the group because of that reason. Because it wasn't just like they were so much better athletically. Like, the Pacers were on par with them. Reggie Miller alluded to that. Jalen Rose did too. The Jazz were certainly on par with them. They had some older guys too, but they were – Malone was right off an MVP year. Stockton was still great. And the fact that they were still able to go out and with a hobbled Pippen and Rodman was fairly ineffective in the finals that year, like, they still found a way to do it, which that's why that's my favorite group. That excited me the most about it all. And we can get back to this, but the other thing I was bringing up is that, you know how, like, we're spoiled with that group. Think about that specific time in our lives. So I was 13, you were 12, right? So that month, June 14th, 1998 is when they won the title, right? Think about that 2 month stretch of Chicago sports fandom for someone like us. People that were Bulls fans, 6 weeks prior. So after the Bulls lost to the Hornets in game two, which they show, that's the infamous Michael in the documentary, holding the bat with a cigar in his mouth, yeah. Basically just salivating at a chance to play the Hornets again in game three. The day before is when Kerry Wood struck out 20 Houston Astros.
Right.
So we have that. We have the 98 playoffs. We're getting out of school for the summer. Then that month that the Bulls, Jordan's last game as a Bull, last series as a Bull, the NBA Finals is going on. Sammy Sosa is in the midst of the greatest home run month in MLB history when he pops 20. That same month that Jordan ends up hitting the game-winning shot for the Jazz, June 1998, we're also enjoying supplementary and ancillary to this. It almost was backseat that Sammy Sosa hit 20 bombs to catch up to that Mark McGwire and at the time, like, Griffey and Greg Vaughn in the home run chase. Of course, he was in it the rest of the way. I mean, what a time to be alive that was.
Yeah, you know.
June 98, what an insane month.
That's a great point. I didn't think of it until you mentioned it, but I will say that, you know, there was a part of me, and I'm sure you felt the same way because we're about the same age, watching this. Now, I mean, you said there was a lot of the stuff you remembered. I remembered a good amount of the basic macro stuff, but I felt too young to appreciate a lot of what, I mean, some of the stuff I'll caveat by saying I know because I'm an adult who has been a sportscaster living in Chicago my whole life. So I know a lot of this stuff because I've heard about it or I've read about it or I've watched it after the fact. But I don't remember as much as a kid experiencing it because I felt like you said, I was 12 for the last title. So I remember watching the 98 playoffs pretty well, like with family. And I remember being with my dad and my uncle and my mom and different people, like watching some of these championships. But, you know, we were too young to be like reading the paper every day. And I didn't remember all this sort of circus stuff that went along with them. Like, I wasn't listening to sports talk radio when I was 11. You know, like, I didn't know. I remember watching games, and I loved watching games.
I was listening to 1160 The Score.
Yeah, were you?
Like, it was 1160 back in the day.
I would say that I wasn't until probably I was in high school. And so that was after the run. So, like, it, for me, it was, it was, there were certain things that were very illuminating. Like, I forgot that Dennis Rodman, during the 98 finals, went to Detroit and did that wrestling stunt with Hulk Hogan. I forgot.
I was watching that at that event live.
Were you really?
I was a WCW fan at that time. So I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, what? I was like, and like, this is live. I remember thinking, like, this isn't taped, right? I don't know. That's wild.
Well, that and like him going to Vegas in 96 and all that stuff. Like, I don't remember. I mean, I have vague memories, but some of those things were very illuminating because, you know, we were too young. Like, the one thing that I will say is, and I tweeted about this a couple times watching the show, you know, there are things I definitely learned because I was too young to appreciate it or I read about it, but to see it presented in this way was different. But as a kid growing up in Deerfield, where they practiced, the things that I remember most are, and this, I don't mean to sound like I'm in no way like an expert because of this or anything like that, but like, I just remember being 8 years old and going to Baker Square in Deerfield, like BJ Armstrong talked about. And,
so good.
And you'd see the Bulls at like having breakfast. But like, as an 8 year old, like, you understand, you have young kids. I didn't realize how cool this was or how big a deal this was. You know, I was eight. It was just sort of like, this was a thing that was part of my life. I mean, I was a diehard Bulls fan. I mean, listen, I was a kid named Jordan who grew up in Deerfield, suburban Chicago, while the Bulls are the greatest team in the world. I had, you know, I begged my parents for a pair of Air Jordans because my name is on the shoe. And then I would have like the Jordan t-shirts and the Jordan shirts.
It didn't help your vertical though, did it?
No.
Didn't help your vertical.
Unfortunately, I was still white and Jewish, which hurt me in a big way. But, you know, like, I loved it. I lived it. I was obsessed with the NBA as a kid. Like, I was obsessed with Jordan and the Bulls. But, you know, these were things that happened. Like, when BJ mentioned that, that took me back. Because I remember a couple times, and I remember calling my mom after that episode. I was like, do you remember when I was like 7 or 8 and we went to Baker Square and Michael and Scotty and BJ and Horace were having breakfast and you took me over and introduced me to them and they like signed autographs? I mean, this is before smartphones, right? This is before social media. So like they could do stuff like this and it wasn't that big a deal. And you could interact with them in ways that you could never do with today's athletes for obvious reasons. So like those things, and those experiences growing up, you know, when I was 11, my dad got tickets somehow to a charity event that was at the Berto Center. And we lived 5 minutes from the Berto Center. And my dad was sending me pictures of me as a little kid, like meeting Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and all these guys at this charity thing. And me in my little Michael Jordan jersey. And like, this was amazing. And one of the things that was amazing about this show for me personally was feeling like I could watch a video about things that happened in my childhood that I couldn't appreciate because I was a child that I can now appreciate as a 34-year-old adult. You know, like, so that that part of it was incredibly nostalgic and cool. And not just, I mean, you know, Michael's the greatest and his career was fascinating and all this stuff was amazing, but just like growing up around this stuff, but not having the full appreciation, like that to me was so resonant that, you know, I know that that's unique maybe to my experience and to people I grew up with versus others who were watching this, who just knew of Michael Jordan from other states or other places. But that was really kind of, that was kind of a wild thing for me personally to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what made the whole show so great is that it could hit you in a different way. Like someone like you, where it took you back and took me back to an extent we didn't necessarily learn, but there's people that learned a lot about, you know, the Bulls and that team and the personalities that encompassed it. And what motivated Mike and some of the behind the scenes footage was great. But just, there was a cast of characters, man. And like,
oh my God,
it was fun to see. And even like the Steve Kerr thing last night, the development with him, like, he's just a freaking man, by the way.
He's incredible.
Steve Kerr, like,
yes,
that guy is just unreal. I tweeted last night, like, I was a senior in high school. My varsity number was 25 in basketball because of Steve Kerr, because all I could do was shoot threes. He obviously could do a lot more than that because he made it to the NBA, but like, that was his strength. And I'm like more proud that that's my number now because of like who he's become, you know, after. Like, this will never happen, and I get it doesn't necessarily make sense, but I'm like, God, they could just find a way to hire that dude as coach. Like,
oh,
bring him
God.
Over. Like, man, that would bring back some nostalgia to the team, and also like, hey, this guy's actually good at what he does on top of it. So, that was, I guess, one of the more revealing things to me is not knowing that full backstory about him and his dad and stuff like that. But it was incredible. Like, it's just like Sunday night's going to happen. I'm just going to have to watch like regular HBO and Showtime programming.
I know.
So
what a downer.
What else to do.
I will say, like, there are a few observations that I want to throw at you, and I want us to get your opinion of these. I mean, because we can get into this whole era LeBron, Michael crap, but I mean, we both agree that Michael's the greatest. And
yeah.
I mean, to me, that has sort of been a dumbed down extra discussion that has occurred, which doesn't need to happen, but we'll have that later in the podcast. Well, here's one observation, you know, because it's interesting because obviously Michael is behind this in a large way. So a lot of the storytelling, while fascinating and really, really well done, is coming obviously from his perspective.
Yeah.
So there were a few things that I thought were really interesting and I'm curious your opinion on. One, I think that maybe this is too harsh, but I feel like this Last Dance 10 episode saga makes Scottie Pippen look like a quitter. Is that too harsh?
I thought that the perspective, and maybe they didn't intend this, wasn't the best, but I think the last episode, I feel like, vindicates
that. I agree
that a little bit when they bring on Chip Schaefer saying like, yeah, people call him a quitter. Like, that's crap. And it almost made it seem like they retroactively decided to like scrap it and be like, no, we got to make him look good. But obviously these have been done for a while. But like the whole thing, and I remember that game and like watching it repeatedly, like that dude was done in that game. So that like vindicates the whole like 1.8 seconds, the migraine situation, which was obviously tough in general. But I think if they hadn't really, I guess, come back and made a sort of resolution, I think it could have give him like a bad look, but I think that changed it overall. If you watched the last episode, like I know you did.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're someone that watched the last episode, you could see it.
Okay. Because I mean, I was a big Pippen fan as a kid, but I have to say there were things in this special that made me like, man, like this is not a good look for you. And then this is a piggybacking off that. Here's another observation. Nobody apologized for anything. Like, Scottie Pippen sits out with 1.8 left, then says, when they give him the chance, he goes, I'd still do it again. Like, Dennis Rodman walks out on the team to go to Vegas and party for 48 hours and then goes and does this wrestling stunt and does not apologize. And again, I'm not saying that these people have to apologize. I just think it's interesting that nobody apologized for anything they did. Also, like Reinsdorf blowing up the team. And I mean, for Michael to say in last night's finale that they could have brought the whole team back for a run at 7, and then for Reinsdorf to say that these would have been bad investments, like, how do you say that? Like,
I thought it was funny when it was like Joe Ostrowski, I think I saw, because I was thinking this, but he actually like wrote it out, tweeted, our friend from the Score said,
yeah,
something like, yeah, the second person Reinsdorf listed was like Steve Kerr. About, he's like, yeah, like about not being able to bring him back because of the money, and I would have crippled and bankrupted the organization. He was like, yeah, I'm sure the $1.7 million that Steve Kerr would have made on a 1-year contract would have really just put the franchise down under.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like
that really
saying?
Would have changed it.
Right. So, I mean, there is the fact that they made Pippen look like kind of a quitter. They made, I mean, Reinsdorf and Krause, I think, are both worthy villains in this story. I think here's part of it for me. Like, Krause was an easy person to pick on for obvious reasons. I think when he said the comment about organizations win championships, you know, I think part of this has been
repeatedly
right,
said it.
Stupid. But I think part of this has been sort of misframed. I don't think that comment is crazy. I don't think that I think, like, look at the Cubs, right? When the Cubs won, the organization was rebuilt with Theo Epstein at the helm, and they built a team that won the World Series. Organizations have a big part in winning a championship. The problem with the comments was that he kept doing it to try to get credit when you had the greatest player in the world, and obviously players are the first thing in terms of the pecking order that win championships. Theo Epstein would be the first to tell you, yes, I was hired as president of the team, but Chris Bryant and John Lester and Anthony Rizzo and these guys won the championship. I didn't win the championship. I helped bring in and foster the the culture and the people to win, right? So the thought of Jerry Krause to say organizations win championships, to me, I mean, the way it came off is way worse than the actual statement. The statement itself, to me, is valid. It's just that he had to be such a Napoleonic weasel about the whole thing. That was the problem. It wasn't the comment, to me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a couple things. It was, you're right, it's the malice behind it. So it's like, it was just went along with the narrative of, you know, wanting to get credit and just saying it repeatedly. And because, I mean, obviously organizations are involved, but usually the people that deserve the credit of the first that defer,
of course.
You mentioned with like someone like Theo.
Yes.
And secondly, this is basketball, right? Like baseball, it takes an army. And yes, it takes an army in hoops too, but like you're literally playing with this. You have the single greatest athlete
ever
of all time, or at least in the sport. And like, use that. Like, I mean, you could say, organization put it together. And they use it as a rallying cry and whatnot. And I understand people that it's not really all that fair to, you know, demonize someone like Krause because he's not around to tell his side of the story. And like, that's fair to an extent, but like, listen, let's not make the guy a martyr either, because there are so many people that were saying outside of this documentary that are what they said is consistent with outsiders' perspective too. Like there's players chiming in that I haven't, like Scott Williams tweeted about this.
Scott Williams
didn't even know was on Twitter. Isn't like been on the team in 25 years and was talking about like literally like everything they're saying is right. Like about just like the way, unfortunately, that he managed to work people that desire for credit. So like I get maybe it went over the top at times, like, you know, villainizing him, but like at the same time, because he wasn't around to tell his side of the story up until when he gave like his memoirs out the other day. But like, let's not all of a sudden make him like he's this like anti-hero, like that's
deserves
a lot more credit.
To be fair, clear, I am not defending him. I think
I'm just on a rant about what I've seen in general on Twitter.
I'm just saying that like I think that it is nuanced. You know what I'm saying? And I think you agree with me. Like it's nuanced. Like what his problem was that he couldn't accept not getting credit. And nobody wants to hear from the arrogant guy unless you back it up all the time, right? Like Michael was really arrogant, but he always won backed it up.
Yeah.
So like people could accept it, but they didn't want to hear it from Jerry Krause because he wasn't on the court doing it. It's a different thing. And so like all Jerry needed to do at some point during that run was to say, listen, you know, Michael Jordan is the focal point of this. We have great players. We're really lucky to have these great players. And I had a small part in it, but I'm very thankful that I had all these wonderfully talented guys that were the focal point of us winning a championship. That's all I had to say. But I get why they didn't like him. He's not likable for all the obvious reasons. I just think that there is a nuance to it, and people are taking the phrasing of what he said and parsing it into all these things. Like, organizations do have a important role in winning. But yes, obviously, if you have Michael Jordan, then it makes it a whole lot easier to win. But so that was another observation. Another is that the idea, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on this, but just the idea that you had this super team and you didn't see it to its full conclusion because you felt that the assets were aging. I just can't imagine in today's day and age with social media and everything, how this would, I mean, obviously it's up to the Reinsdorf family because they're the ones with the purse strings. So I guess it could have happened anyway. They would have gotten excoriated more because there's more voices in the atmosphere than there ever have been. It's so unbelievable to me that they couldn't have tried to win another. Like, I suppose if Michael had never played baseball, right? If he had stayed in the NBA in 94 and 95, I don't know if the Bulls would have won 8 titles in a row. It stands to reason to me, as great as Michael was, that they might have lost one of those years because it's really hard to win that many titles in a row, even if you have the greatest player of all time. Maybe they would have won, you know, 91 to 96 and then lost in 97. The point is, no one knows that they could have won 8 in a row. But it does seem that the Bulls, at least, I agree with you, maybe the 98 team, let's say it was the worst of the 6 championship teams, for the sake of argument, if they'd all come back in 99, they still could have won it again. And they still probably would have been the favorite to win again. Yeah. Even if you think Indiana was on the come, which they were, and how difficult that series was, and I still would have taken my chances with San Antonio. Just the idea that they were so worried about blowing it up when you had this team that was so unbelievable. It's just so, it's so difficult to put that in perspective. It's like, okay, so I get the idea of aging assets, but you have the greatest team maybe ever assembled in NBA history still together. Yes, they're aging. And in saying all that, there is another part of me that believes that the mystique, part of the mystique in the legend of the 90s Bulls is that they never lost in the finals. And that had they kept going, and if they had lost, would we look at them in a different way, right? So like, all of this is just such an amazing think piece to discuss. And I think that's why it's been discussed so much over the last couple of weeks. Your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not, I think a lot of people are really fired up after Jordan basically said I would have come back. I'm okay. Like, I mean, you're right. Like, you look at 99 and you look at the aesthetics and they're aging, but, and you know, they didn't know that going into it, but there was a World Cup. They only played 50 regular season games that year, which you would think would have helped the Bulls. Yes. So it's like rest for the older guys. And like the short sample size messed up some seedings and things like that. But like the Knicks were the 8th seed that went to the finals. Like, right, you would have think like the Bulls weren't going to, you know, collapse there. And they had a rookie Tim Duncan, or second year Tim Duncan, excuse me. And I know David Robbins was still around, but like, yeah, they could have won. And, you know, they might have been the favorites too. But I'll be honest with you. Even when I was a kid, when that happened in 98, I'm a sucker for finales. Like, I'm a sucker for perfect endings.
So you didn't like the Seinfeld finale.
I haven't even watched The Sopranos start to finish because I know what happens at the end and I don't really like it. So
yeah.
I haven't gone all the way back to watch the original show, even though I heard it's fantastic. So like, I'm a sucker for it. And the way that ended was just so perfect. Like, not just them winning, but the shot, just the shot though, the sequence of the basket, driving to the basket, getting a steal and getting the basket, like in a 1-point game in the finals, like it was so perfect. And I thought that retirement was just great, that I was like fine with them not running it back at the time with the chance that it wouldn't have diminished, I'm sure, their legacy and the mystique of that group. But your point, like, they never lost. And that's always talked about when people argue it was the best team ever, it was the best player ever. It's like, well, they never lost. So like, I don't know. I loved the his Jordan's quote at the end. It was like one of my favorites. And like, it was like, they can't win until we quit. So good.
Right.
So like, who knows if what would have happened if they didn't.
It's just the idea that they were trying to run these guys out. It's like, you have something that is so valuable. And it's like,
I would be shocked if it ever happened today, right?
Right.
Can you imagine even the Warriors? Like, KD left on his own, but can you imagine if like the Warriors ownership group was like, you know what, guys, like we might lose next year. Like, LeBron's got a pretty good team, or the Lakers might be good. So we're just gonna get rid of Steph and KD, right, and Clay, and then just kind of rebuild from scratch.
They would have been annihilated. I mean, all I'm saying is that it's really, there's no defense to me that is, I get what you're saying. And I think that the way it ended, as in terms of the storyline, was sort of like the perfect exclamation point, but it still makes me sick that Jerry Krause, I mean, like, Reinsdorf tries to parse all this, right? Like, how is it possible that you could let your general manager say to the coach before the season, like, hey,
I don't care if you go 82-0.
I don't care if you go 82-0, we're not bringing you back.
You're gone.
Like, how can you let that happen? And if it does happen, how do you not, like, say, Jerry, you're done talking to Phil. Jerry then goes, because Jerry then went over Krause, Jerry Reinsdorf went over Krause to make sure Phil was back for 98, right? They signed him to that $6 million contract, right? So he was willing
to see him. Yeah.
He was willing to do that. But just the idea that he was willing to let them blow up this, I mean, like, Bulls tickets were insane in terms of expense and price. They were the Beatles. They were the most famous sports team in the world. They were, I mean, we know all the superlatives. So the idea that you had it and you wouldn't want to keep it as long as it was possible to keep, that I can't understand. I can't. I get that they're depreciating assets.
The Bulls are notorious for it, I guess. They did it to a much lesser extent, obviously way lesser extent. But like, remember when Todd, like, Tibbs was like ready last year, everyone was like, oh, he's gone regardless of what they do here.
Right.
Like, they could have won the championship and I feel like they would have let him go. It's just hilarious that like history repeated itself and like how you could basically make a predetermination prior to seeing what potential results could lie ahead.
Like, Jerry Krause was so determined to it was like a spite rebuild. It was like something out of a Curb episode, right? Like, Larry David opens a spite coffee shop. Jerry Krause wanted a spite rebuild to spite everyone and go, like, look, I'm going to build the next champion. Well, you know what?
And it's going to be better.
It's 22 years later.
Because I did it.
And they have one Eastern Conference Finals win in the last 22 years. So
it was a fun game, though. It was a really good game. Taj had that great dunk. They had the anniversary.
It was very entertaining.
It was a great dunk. It was a fun game.
I'm just saying,
it's not worth 22 years, though.
I'm just saying, like, as a huge basketball fan, and I was like the most obsessed Bulls fan as a kid. And now I'm like, you know, there was a level of apathy with the Bulls for me, because when you had what that was,
most people, there's a level of apathy.
Like, when I, as a kid, we had that, and now nothing compares to it. And yes, they've had some bad luck between Michael's retirement, the second one. Let's forget the Wizards playing, but you know, the 98 Last Dance. Since then, there have obviously been some bright spots, like the Curry and Chandler Bulls went to the playoffs a couple times. They were exciting. Obviously, you had the Rose era, which could have been very different if he didn't have all the injury history. Maybe they would have won a title. So they got lucky to get him, but then they got unlucky that he wasn't healthy when he was here. But okay, so all those things taken into account, they still have been nowhere close to what they were. And maybe they will never be there again. Maybe that's part of the curse of what this run was. But just the idea that you wouldn't see it to its full conclusion when most of the parties were willing to come back. And I've heard some people saying, like, well, you know, Phil was the real catalyst to them blowing it up. Well, Phil was told, you're out of here no matter what.
He was done. He made its peace with it. He was gone. He'd moved on.
So like, so we're going to blame Phil that after the season that he wouldn't want to come back given that situation. Like, no, that's not Phil's fault.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just like there. I mean, listen, there's so many other things. The whole, I mean, the Slim Buhler thing was really interesting. And the,
so good.
And there's so many of the side storylines, like Rodman is fascinating just on his own, and Scotty and all the backstories were great. And there were so many things with Michael. Like I thought that that story with his bodyguard Gus was a beautiful story that they did last night.
Yeah.
I was really interested in that. One thing that I thought was interesting, and I have to give my wife credit for this because I didn't think about this. And I know Michael put this together, but you know, for her, you know, she obviously grew up in Chicago, but she's 4.5 years younger than me. So like she was much younger when this stuff was happening. She was saying, you know, like they really never talked about Juanita at all in the 10 episodes.
Yeah. I thought about that.
The kids were in it just in the last episode, but they really were not discussed much at all. I'm not even criticizing it. I'm just curious as to, did Michael not want his family, his, you know, immediate family to be discussed? I mean, because obviously his mother and father had fairly prominent roles in the show and in the early episodes setting up his childhood. You know, Larry is in it and he clearly had a role in it, but his wife and kids had almost no role in this. I'm just curious as to why, and his current wife and children were never once mentioned.
Yeah. My guess is, and again, it's not fair to speculate, but to your point, just like didn't want that to become a talking point and like for them specifically and dig into what happened there or whatnot. So,
because I
was like surprised because I had noticed that. And obviously when Jeffrey, Marcus and Jasmine came on in the finale, you're like, oh, wow. Like they did bring them on, but it was obviously just talking about how they hated Utah.
Right.
So,
and I get it. Like the show,
it makes sense. I was just curious. Yeah.
The show was supposed to be about, I guess, you know, The Last Dance and the run and not as much, but they did do personal story. So I was just curious as to what, maybe they had stuff and they decided to cut it. Maybe Michael didn't want it. I would just be curious only because that shapes part of who he is too. That's all. I mean, if he has obviously every right not to want that to be in there and that's fine. I'm just, that made me wonder. But otherwise I thought, you know, it was great.
Yeah. I think all the like little small things, and I think like this was the episode like 8, I want to say, just the sort of the leadership style and if that would play and was he a bully and what do you expect out of folks and the trash talk and his teammates being afraid of him and like it's not going to work everyone, you know, just and not everyone get away with that. But I think what I always kind of like have talked about, and again, I don't want to get too far in this like debate on the greatest of all time and like did he even make his teammates better and like all this stuff and did other players make their teammates better than he did? And it's like, listen, outside of what he did to basketball wise just make his teammates better, like by drawing attention, drawing defenders away, like outside of that, which is very much comes into play because of how he was and how much he expected of his attention to detail there was. Look at the big moments and the big games in his history in the playoffs, and his teammates just always showed up. And you have to think it had something to do with his level of attention to detail and like how prepared they were going into that. There was no brain farts in these games that you'll see a lot of times. Like Steve Kerr hitting a shot, John Paxson, they always showed up in the big moments. Luke Longley hit the big shot we saw in game one of the finals. He also had a huge shot at Pacers. Like they were just always ready. And I think that's an area that was underrated because you can't quantify. It's not really a tangible thing.
Yeah.
But Michael made sure because of that leadership style, he made them so well prepared for the big moments. Because he said, like, you know, like, if you're not ready, like, from take it from me from practice, how are you going to hear from the fans? How are you going to do it against Karl Malone and John Stockton and John Kemp, Gary Payton, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
And they reward it. I mean, look at it. They all executed in the big moments. And I think, to me, that's what even separated some from the field is that he could get some of his teammates that nobody else probably could.
That's a great point. So, that's a great point. I think he
– that's my number one thing.
He made everyone better around him. He was supremely focused. He never took his eye off the ball when it came to the ultimate goal of winning. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, I think sometimes people talk about Michael and his mentality versus LeBron and all these other things. Michael only had one way of doing it, and it was full 100% devotion to the championship. That's it. And the difference between him and everybody else, when you talk about the mentality, is that he was also able to execute the things that he wanted to get out of himself, which makes him the greatest, right? Like, there, you know, I think people when they make these comparisons between LeBron and Michael, like, LeBron is one of the most talented athletes I've ever seen. He's an incredible basketball player. I don't know where he ranks. Maybe he's second all time. Let's say he is, right? LeBron is like, is from a different, everyone's cut from a different cloth than Michael. Michael was just this insane, like, psycho-focused dude who was also the best athlete in the world and the most capable of executing in every moment and could have this will and this belief and then also make it happen. Like, LeBron wants to beat you too, but he's also like this super nice guy that's doing graduation ceremonies for people online during the pandemic. Like, Michael would never have done stuff like that. And like, that's not a criticism of Michael. It's just, they're just different, right? Like, nobody is like Michael in terms of his mentality. Everything was about like being focused on crushing your soul and winning the championship. Like, that was it. And so,
yeah,
like, I just think that, you know, yeah, when it comes to comparing him to anybody else, there's nobody that had that just total killer mentality like him, other than, I think, the only player that was similar is Kobe. The difference is Kobe wasn't quite as good as Michael, so he couldn't make it happen as much as Michael could make it happen. But that's not to say that Kobe wasn't incredible and obviously one of the greatest of all time. It just, Michael had the unique ability of being the most motivated and the best, right? So, like, that's what made him him.
Yeah, you rarely do see in anything, not just basketball or sports, that where someone's got a ceiling or a skill set as high as what he had and overachieved it. It's just like, there's always a gap there. And for him, like people, there's people that have low ceilings that are overachievers, and there's people that, you know, have high ceilings that are underachievers. He had an incredibly high ceiling, and he somehow overachieved because he was that killer. So yeah, it was on display the whole time. It was a blast. I'm going to miss it this Sunday.
All right, so as we wrap up here, because we could talk about The Last Dance for two more hours, will there be baseball? And how much baseball? I mean, what is your – I mean, obviously none of us know. We're all guessing. But what is your sense of what's going to happen here?
I don't know. I go back and forth. I think that there's, again, for pure speculation, gut, and just reading what everyone else knows. Like, I know nothing additionally. I think they're going to play. Going to find a way to make it happen. Obviously, fanless, which is fine. Just want something on during the day for 3 hours to distract me. And if they do the sort of the proposed plan, I mean, that's great. You know, it's just 1 year. We'll deal with it, but it's 3 hours of the Cubs playing every single day. And with a chance to, not only that, I was like, even if they do come back and it was like the 2012 Cubs or 2010 Cubs, like,
yeah,
how bad that would be. At least, like, I don't know if they're going to win or win the division, but they're in the mix. They're going to be competitive.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I want. Like, yeah, I would kill for the 2019 collapse right now. Like, that level Cubs, like, figure it out. Like, find a way to just be competitive. And, like, I think they're going to play. I think they made some minor improvements. They didn't have the big overhaul that people expected, which now might be a good thing. So there's less things, gaps to mend and fences to mend, because they're basically the same group as what they were a year ago. But we'll see. I hope it happens, and I hope it happens in the next, you know, what's the projection, 6 weeks or so.
Is it a Cubby occurrence that Chris Bryant is coming up on the end of his time with the Cubs, but a global pandemic is wiping out his final seasons?
No, because if it was not the occurrence, this would have happened in October 2016, the pandemic. This would have happened. Right. I'm shocked that it actually didn't, if I'm being honest with you. Like there was always the jokes that like the lights were going to go out in Game 7 of the Cubs World Series before they won, or that an asteroid was going to hit the Earth. But now it makes too much sense that it would be like a pandemic, and I'm shocked that it arrived 4 years late, to be honest with you.
That's a great point. So. That's a great point. I mean, I hope they play, but I only hope they play, honestly, if they can be safe. Like, I love sports.
Oh, yeah.
And I miss sports. But I feel like there's so much of this like belief out there that like people have to go out there and entertain us because we're bored. It's like, no, they don't have to risk their lives to entertain us. Like if they can't play,
they have to absolutely risk their lives to try to rip hits off of Carlos Martinez and Anthony Reyes.
Like we joke because it's asinine to us.
But I disagree with your sentiments completely.
I mean, like I'm obviously being facetious, but I think that is out there. So, I mean, like, it's crazy to us, but that's out there.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
And so it's like,
I'm not addressing those people though.
Right.
I can't do it.
Yeah. It's like, no, they don't need to be out there to entertain us while we're in the middle of this. But if there is a way that, I mean, obviously until we have a vaccine, nothing is going to be foolproof, which is scary. But if there is a way for them to be tested and treated and do this in the most responsible manner, whatever that is, with the health experts' blessing, then I would love to see baseball. Obviously, it'd be great. You know what, though? The ultimate tough thing is I really hope we can watch it if it does come back. Because currently, I don't get the Cubs channel. that would just be the worst thing ever.
It was almost imminent, right, though? Thankfully.
Well,
like it looks like it was on track to happen. There was a report that came out before this started in March.
Now that would be a Cubby occurrence.
That would be exactly.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Like you're sitting here waiting for the games to come on and you're getting nothing.
I feel kind of annoyed now that I don't get it because my friends will be like I see like the station marquee tweet out like, oh, this game's on, and it'll be like random games. I'm like, oh, this is cool.
Right. I wish I could watch.
In a while. And I wish I could put on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we got Bulls games.
I don't know. I will say too, like, I have to like go back and study what happened in the off season because it feels so long ago. So I'm like, okay, what do we even do? So it's like, oh yeah, we got Kipnis on a minor league deal to make people tune at second. If he has a good spring, well, spring's over. That's like, oh, they signed Souza.
A wine dog special. We got Kipnis on the team, so that's good.
Yeah, that's why our boy.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, oh yeah, they have a new manager now. Joe Madden's gone, and like, it's just funny. Like, you know, we're diehards and we know all this stuff, but it's just like, I haven't thought about baseball transactions or free agent moves or trades
in months,
basically since January. So it's like I forget like what actually like. Who's on the dang team now? As crazy as it sounds. They signed 74 guys for the bullpen. I could probably name one of them now.
I have no idea.
Researching.
A bunch of
non-roster invitees.
I almost texted you yesterday because I realized randomly yesterday that Steve Cishek is now on the White Sox.
He's on the White Sox.
Isn't he on the White Sox?
And the good news is yes, he's on the White Sox.
Right.
It's incredible. It's funny. So I would have forgotten that.
Yes.
Entirely.
I was like, wait a second. Am I crazy? No, he's on the White Sox now.
Yeah. And if somebody asks you who's in the Cubs bullpen, you could just say Wick. And that would cover like 25% of the Cubs anyway. So
no, if you ask
me, honestly, a lot of guys named Wick.
Right now, if you ask me who's in the Cubs bullpen, I'd be like Hector Rondon, Chapman. I have no idea.
Strope? No, he's on the Reds.
Oh yeah. Strope's on the Reds. That's weird. That's really weird.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Body by Strope is on the Reds.
And like, I also forgot that the Reds are supposed to be kind of good now. So like I need to like study this stuff because when the year rolls around and they start playing, I'll be like, okay, well the Reds are bad. And then I'll be like, wait, the Reds are actually, got a bunch of guys.
But you know what's going to happen?
Good now.
If the Reds are good, then by process of opposite theory, we're going to start beating up on the Reds because We can't beat the Reds when they're bad.
When last year we just couldn't beat them.
Right. When they're bad, we can't beat them. Yeah, so now if they're good, it means we're going to crush them. Right?
That was like opposite with the Cardinals. Remember when we'd be awful and we'd like win the season series against the Cardinals? In 06 when the Cubs won like 12 games the entire year.
Yes.
The Cardinals won the World Series. And the Cubs were like 12-6 against the Cardinals that year.
This means
which made zero sense.
We really need
to. And I guess my math is off because that would mean 100% of their wins would come against the Cardinals. But I think they won like 60 games. But it was like some like 15 to 20% of their wins came against the Cardinals.
In your mind, this is wild. It happened, which is a good way to think. So, all right, we'll do this again soon. Yep. This was fun. Hopefully there's sports to talk about. But if not, we can just talk about the 90s Bulls. I'm honestly fine with that. I'm good with that.
That's all we got.
Yeah.
That's all I've gotten. So,
that or the 16 Cubs. The Bulls,
so it makes sense.
Or when we can start going through
cool.
the 16
Cubs.
Let's
do it again sometime.
Right? Like, we'll talk about the 25-6 start. Why don't they do a 30-for-30 on that?
I'm excited.
Let's go. Or actually, I am kind of excited for that Sosa and Maguire documentary. Right? Aren't they doing...
That'll be good. Again, more Chicago 1998, the home run chase, which was a massive boon to my summer going into my eighth grade year. Quite a blast. A really fun Cubs team, too. That team kind of walked down water. Everything went their way.
Yes.
But they're a fun group as well.
Yes. Ronnie, tell us about Mark Clark.
Cool.
So, all right. Vito, great to see you. We will do this podcast again soon. And thanks. If you've made it this far, it's definitely the pandemic and you were looking for something to do. Thanks for listening to B Squared. We'll talk to you next time.